Embrace the Suck. Professor Wostrom liked to get to the classroom 5 or 10 minutes early. Always good to grok out the room, he thought. Scrape out the cobwebs from the corners. Breathe deep to inflate the professorial persona. He yanked open the shades. The earlier professors always had them tight shut. Then they pulled up the PowerPoint displays of biannual budgetary coaxials as their students dutifully opened their laptops and pretended to be their students while surfing eBay, various brain cell-eating games, porn sites, etc. Professor Wostrom would have none of it. No PowerPoint on his part, no laptops on theirs. He even made them write in longhand in class. Once a student had raised his hand to say he'd been using keyboards so long he'd forgotten how to write in cursive. Professor Wostrom stared at him for a long, frozen while and did not reply. There were food stains on Professor Wostrom's shirt, vaguely reddish, perhaps from fast food gulped down while thinking about something else. Sometimes one of his shoes became untied. When this happened, he usually did not notice until he tripped. This had become a known fact among his students over the years, and when he finally heard of it at a faculty party, he began wearing loafers. He had a habit of using the expression, "if you will," when venturing an explanation while giving lectures. Eventually, students began keeping count of how many times he would say this during a class, then compare their counts. He had been legendary for a long time. As younger faculty with flashier offerings and trendy scholarship began to fill the classrooms, and departments changed their official titles to meet a future certain only to be weird, at least in Professor Wostrom's considered opinion. He was absent-minded even before it became a professorial trope. Once, his department chair had seen him from a distance while crossing the parking lot. "Joe," he had called out, "aren't you supposed to be at a conference in St. Louis?" "Oh, my God, you're right," had been the shocked reply. He had been there back when the university had been a college, 4 presidents ago, when the college had been regarded as a kind of glorified high school, 95% of its students commuting from the surrounding cities and towns. How many colleagues had he seen move on, retire, or die while tenured? Dozens. And now the percentage had exactly flipped, with 95% of students living in townhouses, state-of-the-art apartments with common rooms and giant TVs. Now students came from all over the world, literally. Professor Wostrom marveled at it all. These days it was rare to find a local kid in his class. Students ate in splendor, with salad bars, pizza stations, various carveries, and vegetarian delectables of all kinds. They worked out at the Health and Wellness Center, honing their skills on the climbing wall while measuring their degree of aerobic perfection. Soon they began filtering in. The class met at 12:30, but it was obvious many of them had only recently gotten out of bed. Professor Wostrom wondered what their lives must be like in the townhouses after dark. But actually, he emphatically didn't want to know. Several of them of both genders had bedhead hair and wore dorm pants, flip-flops, and T-shirts adorned with sports logos. A sprinkling of women were done up like the young, sharp-edged local news anchors they watched on their huge flat-screen TVs. No, Professor Wostrom emphatically did not want to know, maybe at one time, but not anymore. He turned to write an assignment on the whiteboard. For years he had walked the halls with his back covered in chalk dust. As sure an emblem of his trade as the wood shavings in the carpenter's hair or the stink of the fishmonger. When they had first switched over from blackboards to whiteboards, he had mistakenly used an actual felt marker instead of one designed for the job. The custodians managed to scrape it off. He never found out how they did it, but they had seemed rather cold to him ever since. At least that's what Professor Wostrom thought whenever he passed them on campus. A student named Josh passed out copies of an original poem to the class. It was titled, "America, Open All Night and There's Plenty of Free Parking." Professor Wostrom did not care for the use of the ampersand. ever, especially not in something as sacred as a poem title. He had been weaned on Eliot as an example of brazen abstraction, and actually felt more comfortable in the presence of poetry from the 19th century, though no one else had the slightest interest anymore. But really, the ampersand was the least of it. That wasn't a title, it was an ad. Is that how Josh really felt about his life and his time? Josh smirked as he mumbled through his poem, something about, "You won't believe how we've jacked the prices, then put it all on sale. Just think of the savings." Later, Professor Wostrom looked through the stack of critiques written by the class. "You nailed it, dude," said one. "Really embraced the suck." That one stuck with Professor Wostrom. He thought about it when he dropped his toast butter side down the next morning, and again when the hygienist drew too much blood while scraping his painful shrinking gums. Embrace the suck. Professor Wostrom had lunch every Wednesday with Eric Colby from the Department of Biological Engineering. Dr. Colby had zero interest in poetry, and Professor Wostrom wasn't quite sure what biological engineering was. Their talk centered around their general disgust at everything else, which gave them wide conversational prairies to roam as they picked at salads and slurped soup between impassioned ravings on rising prices, declining moral values, declining restaurant quality, declining movie quality, rising global temperatures, rising global terror threats, and most of all, the horror of dealing with their students. Dr. Colby tested and quizzed his students constantly. He gave weekly quizzes on the assigned readings, in addition to a midterm and a 3-hour final exam, and also an 8-to-10-page term paper. He also very much enjoyed springing surprise quizzes, sometimes right in the middle of a lecture, just because. He spent much of his off hours constructing complex grading curves and 3-part short answer test questions. It was never clear how much information his students were actually taking in, mostly because they were kept so busy being tested and quizzed, examined like so many specimens. Dr. Colby knew he was not beloved, but he enjoyed the adversarial relationship. He punished his students for not knowing as much as he did, never considering that the reason they were seated before him was to learn what he already knew. Dr. Colby was a small man who had apparently had a rough time as a child, especially in gym class. Once he realized he had scholastic talent and a future in academia, he had unconsciously made it his life's mission to avenge his miserable boyhood. Dr. Colby took pleasure in awarding D's and F's, as if they confirmed for him his innate superiority. The nameplate on his office door read, "Eric Colby, Ph.D." Someone, no doubt some angry student, had scratched it out with a penknife. Dr. Colby left it that way, enjoyed showing it to visitors. Professor Wostrom thought that was rather pathetic, but liked having the chance to vent with Dr. Colby every Wednesday over lunch. Today was no different. Professor Wostrom couldn't wait to rant about America, open all night and there's plenty of free parking. He waited patiently in line to get his soup. However, the woman in front of him, a newly hired administrative assistant of some sort, with spike heels and too much foundation, could not decide what she wanted. She and Professor Wostrom had been standing somewhat parallel to each other, and when it was the next person's turn, she had smiled at him and said, "Oh, were you next?" knowing full well that Professor Wostrom would let her cut in. Now, as the line built up behind her, she was asking the counter attendant to list all the sandwich varieties and possible combinations thereof. "Would it be possible to get the wrap with bacon, avocado, and gouda?" she asked. "No, wait, what about the tuna? Does it contain any GMOs, do you happen to know?" Professor Wostrom fumed swastikas and crossbows inside his skull and tapped one loafered foot. "Embrace the suck." "Well, most of America is pretty much open all night these days, and for the most part there are lots of places one could potentially park," was Dr. Colby's initial reaction. He was more interested in discussing the latest mass shooting. Apparently, a disgruntled contestant had mowed down all the other contestants, plus 14 people in the audience, at a hot dog eating contest at a county fair in Indiana. By the time the local SWAT team had killed him, he had also managed to eat 6 more hot dogs. Dr. Colby was outraged. He loved the Second Amendment as much as anyone, but he also loved Indiana and hot dogs and county fairs. He felt if every person there had been carrying a firearm, well, SWAT team intercession would not have even been necessary. He shook his head in disgust and chewed his sandwich with an open mouth. Later, on his way back across campus toward Academic Hall, Professor Wostrom overheard a knot of students walking in front of him. They were talking about the gender studies class they had apparently just come from. "I am no longer allowing myself to be referred to as Ms.," said one. "From now on, only MX." Professor Wostrom still clearly remembered the shift from Miss and Mrs. to Ms. For a long time now, since the turn of the millennium, really, he had felt lost in his daily life. It was hard to explain. People around him now were different. They knew things that he did not, thought thoughts that would never have occurred to him. And it had all happened while he was awake and conscious and driving to campus and teaching his classes and going to committee meetings. It wasn't just the zeitgeist or the cultural pendulum. Professor Wostrom was certainly old enough to have been through several swings of both. This was further underground, seismic, more profound. It had to do with technology. It had to do with embracing the suck. For some time now, the university had been obsessed with assessment and student outcomes. American higher education had essentially divided itself into elite institutions, the Ivies and a few other rich people's schools, and all other colleges and universities, which had become training centers dependent on accreditation. And of course, accreditation was dependent on current political winds, which had been blowing at near gale force in an anti-intellectual direction for quite a few years now, at least in Professor Wostrom's considered opinion. Politicians up at the State House wanted to see data, hard results from taxpayer dollars paying the salaries of lefty professors who did nothing all day but talk about unicorns and indoctrinate their children into Marxism. Professor Wostrom had once served on a panel discussion before an audience of the parents of entering freshmen. He had told them that while it's true that there's not much money in poetry, it's also true that there's not much poetry in money. He thought that was witty. No one else had. One of the other panel members had been a recent graduate who had opened a successful liquor store. In the question and answer session that had followed, several of the parents had questions for the liquor store owner. No one had asked Professor Wostrom anything. Today, Professor Wostrom was late to class, a rarity. His students were already in their seats and were looking at him in strange amusement, as if they knew something he didn't, as if one of his shoes was untied again. But he had switched to the loafers a long time ago now. He checked to make sure the buttons on his shirt were in their proper buttonholes. That, too, was a problem once in a while. But no, he looked fine. A few of the students were smirking, trying to hold in laughs. He turned around. Someone had scrawled, "Embrace the suck," on the whiteboard. Professor Wostrom blanched and reached for the eraser. It wouldn't erase. It was in green felt-tip marker. He decided to ignore it and instead tried to get discussion going about America open all night and there's plenty of free parking. Then something inside him broke wide open. He suddenly had to tell them what was really the truth about everything. He couldn't stand it. He couldn't stand silent there any longer. He had no idea what words to use, but he had to tell them what was in his old man's heart. But his passion hung in the air like the calls of dead birds, and no one would answer. Finally, in desperation, he said, "Okay, I'm just going to go out into the corridor and then come back in again, and we will start class all over fresh. And this time, you will have insightful comments to add to our talk." He walked out the door and heard it click shut behind him. He tried the handle. It had locked. Through the narrow slot window, he could see his students. He could see what was scrawled on the board.